So Shep and Darnell taking you until 7 o'clock. And boy, this is familiar to me. I have done this many a time. Bringing on the voice of the BYU Cougars, Greg Wrubell. Greg, how are you today?
Good, Shep. Hey, Darnell. Yeah, Jason, we've done this a few times before.
yes, we have. What's been going on? I haven't talked to you in a while. What is going on exciting news-wise in the Greg Wrubell life?
Well, you know, we'll have our last little vacation burst next week, and then it's time to get to work for real for the next 7 or 8 months straight. I think it's been a relaxing summer, but it seems like there's always enough news going on, as Darnell and you can both attest. And even right now, you know, you're in basketball's off season, but with BYU taking a summer trip to Spain, you know, they're already getting ready for that. And so, you know, they're practicing. Football will soon be practicing. Women's soccer just around the corner as they start practicing. And so, you know, those three marquee teams at BYU are all getting going, meaning my life gets a little more hectic just around the corner here.
So we've got a lot of stuff to talk to you about. We'll get to, you know, fall camp coming up very shortly, some of the Big 12 stuff. But, you know, people, and we were talking about this earlier, Darnell and I, just it's amazing to me going into year five for Jimmer Fredette, you know, so far removed from Jimmer mania and everything, yet as soon as he signs with the Spurs, he's a trending topic worldwide. It is amazing to me the fandom for Jimmer Fredette. Now, you know, you obviously have been around him a lot more than we have, but that is, I think that speaks to Jimmer and just how great of a guy he is, that 5 years later, an NBA career that has not lived up to his expectations and others for him is still that big of a story.
It is unique because, you know, most players who sign, you know, a training camp deal in the running to be, you know, a 13th, 14th, or 15th guy on an NBA roster normally don't get multiple national writers weighing in on that transaction. You know, it's a story in San Antonio, but you didn't have to search too far to find, you know, multiple national observers, you know, opining on this particular move. And I'm not going to call Jimmer, you know, polarizing, because there's really not too much, you know, negative to say about him beyond, you know, maybe you could say, you know, four seasons of results from where he was drafted to how he's actually performed. But there are a lot of reasons for that. And I think that, you know, the fact that he was so exciting in college and showed, you know, such a unique skill set against pretty good athletes, including Kawhi Leonard, is now hopefully current teammate. People remember those things. And again, you don't have to, you can just, you know, search Jimmer on Twitter on any given day, and somebody's going to be posting a tweet along the lines of, man, remember how great Jimmer was in college, and link to a highlight video. I mean, he's that kind of player. And so I'm hesitant, you know, to affix the negative labels to Jimmer that a lot of people have, because nothing's been ideal so far in his NBA career. Talking about the organizations and coaching staffs and lineups around him and tactical situations, I don't think it's too much of a stretch to say that his best situation might be the one he finds himself, assuming he can make this Spurs roster coming out of camp. Now, it's loaded with talent. I mean, if you talk about cracking it too deep on the Spurs, that's going to be hard to do, but because of the way they play, because of the way they ration minutes, and because of the way they rest some of those superstars, you know, he may see more minutes next year, presuming he makes the team, than he did, you know, in any of his more recent situations. And that could be a good thing, you know, for Jimmer as well. And as I noted this morning, you know, if whatever minutes he ends up playing, presuming he's on the squad, they'll fit. They'll fit their tactics to match Jimmer's skills, I think, more than anyone else has so far. And if there's any way to get Jimmer to be a more effective defender, Pop will find a way to do that too. I don't think there's too much of an argument about the fact that, you know, the Spurs are an organization that seems to fit previously unfittable pieces into a situation that makes people look better than they had in some time, and Jimmer's now in that situation.
Greg, I saw you tweeted out today that you watched a little bit of BYU basketball workouts over in the RB or wherever it was. I don't know if it was today or yesterday, but give me some of your impressions of just what quickly you were able to see as this team has had a couple of practices now in preparation for Spain.
Well, over the last couple of months, you know, just kind of wandering around, you can see various, you know, 3-on-3 games, and I helped out the team with their camps in June, and so I was able to be around the guys and watch them play quite a bit then as well. And a few things jumped out to me. And let's say for a moment that certain things are kind of a given when it comes to Kyle Collinsworth. You really know what he is, and he's certainly seeking to improve and fine-tune his game, but you know what you get with Kyle Collinsworth. So I'm looking for the things maybe we hadn't seen, or things that might be, you know, considered maybe pleasant surprises. And one of the first things that jumped out to me, Darnell, was Jordan Chapman. You know, because of his health situation last year, very limited, and even getting on the floor, we really didn't see much of anything from Jordan. And you wondered if BYU was getting the player they recruited out of high school. Of course, since his mission, there was a minor knee surgery, and how is he going to look? When he's ready to play? And we found out that he's actually looks pretty good. I think Dave would like to see him gain a little bit of weight, put a little more on his frame, but he has, you know, much more game than I thought he had, just based on what he showed last year, which was almost nothing due to his health constraints. And so Jordan Chapman impresses, both as a shot maker and a ball handler. Chase Fisher is a little more comprehensive in his game this year. He's not just a three-point guy right now. He's much more active as a driver, penetrator, and distributor, and I think Chase will be a more complete player and probably add a few points to his scoring average this year at places other than the three-point line. I like Zach Selyus. I'm not sure. I think he and Jake Toulson will battle for that other wing spot, presuming that Kyle and Chase are starters. I think either Zach or Jake becomes that third starter, and probably Jake has the edge over Zach just with the year in the system, maybe a little better lateral defender right now. But those are two fairly exciting players. I was beginning to be excited about Nick Emery until his recent foot injury, and he's not practicing, of course, right now, and really is a setback for Nick, and that's unfortunate because Nick would have been in that mix as well to start that other wing. But, you know, what he's dealing with now really does set him back. We're just recently now seeing Braden Shaw and Jacob Hartsock on the floor, and, man, it is funny how much Jacob Hartsock reminds you of Noah when you watch him. He wears the same number. He's got kind of the same build. He shoots the same way. I would say that Jake's more accomplished deep shooter right now, Jacob is, to begin his BYU career than Noah Hartsock was. Noah developed that, but I think Jake comes in with that game. And I think you could say that was the primary difference between Jacob and Noah coming out of high school was Noah was more the prototypical rebounding inside banger four with a nice feathery touch, and Jacob is a little more of a floater, deep range four. But he's certainly showing that and looks right at home so far. There have been a lot of times when you go, man, that's Noah's shot all over again, not just from the baseline, but also drifting out to the three-point line. That also jumps out to me. Corbin's been good. I think Corbin's also improved a lot just since the end of the season. Nate Austin is still in that position to where, you know, can he go 2 or 3 days in a row hard? How does the back feel after a couple of hard days? Nate's whole thing right now, guys, is to be ready by the start of the season. Still working through that inactivity, but I think signs are positive that way. And this is kind of a long list, I apologize, but Jamal Eights, the fact that he is on the floor now playing 5-on-5 is one of the most encouraging signs at all of all the offseason, because there was a time when you wondered if Jamal was going to make it back, and it does look like he's at least pacing to be in a position to contribute to the start of the season.
Greg, I had a conversation with Tim McComb the other day, BYU assistant coach, and we were talking about the makeup of the roster and the transition of the roster. 9 guys left the roster from last year's team for various reasons, missions and graduation and players moving on. I asked him about how that affects the team and is there a positive to that. And he said the biggest positive is there's a lot of competition for spots because you have mainstays like Tyler Hawes, obviously, and Anson Winder, and guys that were, you just knew what they were doing and they were going to be right there and be a starter. Now all of a sudden you've got guys competing for positions. Can you kind of see that when you watch these guys practice, that there's a lot at stake for someone like you mentioned, like Jordan Chapman?
You know, I think it's any coach's hope to have, you know, at least a solid 2 deep at every position, and I think that's where BYU's developing to right now. And even though so many guys left, as you mentioned, it doesn't feel like the roster overhaul that maybe those numbers might hint at, partially because, and I failed to mention Kyle Davis in a moment ago, and I should not have, because that's a guy who was on the roster last year, so wasn't considered to be, you know, on the team, joins the team now, but he had a year in the system sitting out on his transfer year, and maybe it's easy to overlook Kyle because he's just so solid in what he does. He's got a couple of go-to moves in the post, and they're very reliable, and he's very effective with them, and just so handy and deft around the basket. I really, really like Kyle Davis's game. And again, he's a player who wasn't part of last year's team, and so comes in new, but not totally new. And I think because of guys like him and Jordan Chapman and the fact that Nick Emery's been kind of thought about and talked about as a part of this thing for so long, it doesn't feel like they've had to totally flip things around, if that makes any sense.
The voice of the Cougars, Greg Wrubell, joining us here on ESPN 960. Jason Shepherd and Darnell Dixon in for Ben Criddle today. Let's switch gears to the football team. And you and I actually did a podcast probably about 6 weeks ago, and I asked you this question. I'm curious if your answers have changed as we get closer to fall camp. What are some storylines, or maybe what are the top storylines you're looking at heading into fall camp, which is coming up in just a couple of weeks?
Well, I think I'll want to see quickly who Bronco and Nick Howell are leaning on in the secondary. And because I think some of the more impactful players could be players that weren't with the team or on the roster last year. Micah Hanneman has already been talked about by Bronco as a potential starter. Michael Shelton, how much does he remain in the mix? Someone like Dan Lake, can he come in and actually make a statement as someone as young as he is? In the safety spot, you are looking at Eric Takinaka, who was not on the team last year. Matt Hadley comes off a mission. So these are new guys we're talking about that have not been seen before, seen very little of, and could they be guys that become main players for Bronco and Nick in that secondary? That's one thing that I think will be interesting to follow. And it'll be a little bit tough to tell because of how quickly they'll blow the whistles in the summer. But how much does that defensive front do in terms of causing a little more disruption? I think that's maybe one thing that really hurt BYU last year, and it was reflected in the pass defense, was the inability to be disruptive from the front three. And granted, in a 3-4, you're not looking for necessarily a ton of disruption, but you are looking for at least enough to make things difficult in combination with that outside linebacker. And maybe with Bronson Kafusi playing more primarily on the line, that could be an element that returns to the BYU defense. So those two things, and then plus I think you look to see how quickly guys can bounce back in that linebacker core who were not partaking part in the spring. Harvey Longhi and Manoah Pakula and Fred Warner, guys you did not see in the spring, how good do they look and how quickly can they look good in the summer? Those are kind of defensive storylines for me. And on offense, it's I guess it goes without saying that you want to see how crisp and sharp Jamal Williams looks. And does he have to miss, days because of soreness, to the knee? Can he, can he go multiple days in a row? Does he look like just a regular part of the running back rotation? Because they're not going to be the deepest group. They're going to be counting on, 3-4 guys to carry this whole unit. Jamal and Algie and Adam Hine, and you could throw either Nate Carter or Tolo Ayihoching in that mix as well, although they're different kinds of backs. I think they have to stay very healthy at that spot this year. As long as Taysom Hill is healthy, there are no questions at quarterback other than who emerges as the primary backup. And it'll be fun to see Bo Hodge and Coy Detmer Jr. and, of course, Tanner Mangum flinging around back there and see who impresses. A couple of guys who've switched sides of the ball at tight end in Baldery and Richards and Theodore King. How do they look in their new positions? And because other than that, everything's kind of solid, solidified. I think you want to see at that other tackle spot how Riker Matthews looks, because he, although he's a senior already, hasn't had a lot of sustained runs during his career, either of health or eligibility. And you want to see who takes up that other tackle spot, whether it's Riker or Brad Wilcox. Can you see that 7- or 8-man unit for 5 spots develop, and how quickly? And, of course, Nick Kurtz. We didn't get to see much of him until he had the foot injury last year, and I thought he was looking like he could have a tremendous impact on the team until he got hurt. Those are the things that come to mind for me.
I want to go back to the running backs, and you were mentioning, Jamal, and if he stays healthy, and I think even if he does stay healthy, we all hope he does, one of the guys that you mentioned, Algie Brown, I think Algie is going to prove to be a formidable piece to the puzzle. We saw it last year, his ability to not only be physical and run that way, but catching out of the backfield, speed. Even if Jamal stays healthy, I think Algie could be a huge weapon for the Cougars this year.
If Robert and I didn't have the luxury of Jamal Williams and had to rely on Algie Brown as a Curtis Brown-type do-it-all running back, he'd be very comfortable doing so. A healthy Algie Brown really can do it all. And him getting hurt early last season, I thought was a real blow to the BYU backfield, as much as losing Jamal, because of how versatile Algie is as a receiver, blocker, and ball carrier. And so I'm a big fan and very high on Algie Brown. I think he can be a special part of this BYU offense. And, you know, presuming a healthy Jamal Williams, what a great 1-2 combo to have. And it really does come down to health, you know, just how many, because last year, you know, if you look at BYU's entire offensive backfield last year, and of the guys who had at least 10 carries on the season, the only back to play in every game was Paul Lasique. And that's one guy out of a bunch of guys that carried the ball that they were just so in and out last year due to health, and that's going to be a big thing to watch.
Greg, do you see Algie filling that role that Paul Lasique did with the lead back, the kind of power back and catching the ball out of the backfield? Do you think that's kind of where he fits?
I think he's that and then some. And I bring up Curtis Brown because I think he's more like that than he is a Paul Lasique. I think Algie could be all of what Curtis Brown used to be for BYU. You know, Jamal Williams hasn't been necessarily a primary out-of-the-backfield receiving option, you'll notice, under Robert and I. But I think he likes Algie in that role. And one of Robert's signatures in his first stint as offensive coordinator was his running backs would have high catch numbers every year. And that's not been the way he's gone about it here in version 2.0, but you can see at the start of last season that Algie was beginning to be that guy. That's kind of how I would look to see him.
Want to get your take on the Big 12. It's one of those topics that regardless of the time of day, regardless of the season, you throw it out there and Cougar fans, their ears perk up. Now that the Big 12 has had their media day, you're starting to see, you know, comments come out from the commissioner, from the presidents, from certain head coaches. Do you feel that it is more likely, less likely, or just as likely that BYU is ever invited to the Big 12?
Well, it's hardly a unified front in the Big 12 in terms of public posture, because whether it's a president or a coach or a player, you're going to get varying opinions. But it does seem to be it does seem to me that expansion is being viewed at least as, you know, an inevitability, an eventuality, whereas I think maybe a couple of years ago people thought the Big 12 was happy to, you know, hold the line for maybe a longer term. It seems now that any thought of holding the fort at 10 is losing a foothold. So if expansion is inevitable, and if, this is a big if ESPN has anything to say about the composition of this league moving forward, I think BYU has a notable ally in that respect. I know there is there's a certain geographical hurdle to overcome if the Big 12 is to go that direction. But I'll maintain, and I've kind of been saying this for a while, that if you were to think outside the box a little bit, and although it's not being bandied about as something that's preferred, I think at least from a BYU standpoint, it should be considered preferable to bring BYU in one sport only. That mitigates all those geographical concerns, because when it comes right down to it, a charter flight to Utah is nothing. If you're doing it once every other week, and if you're West Virginia having to come, I'm using West Virginia as an extreme example, to come to Provo once every 2 years, that's nothing. It's nothing to worry about. I don't necessarily think that BYU is a great fit for the Big 12 in all sports. I think there's a lot of things that aren't desirable about it, other than the fact you're in a P5 conference. But I think as a football conference, BYU would be, right at home there. Again, we all have to believe that the best geographical fit in every other way would be the Pac-12, but for a lot of reasons that appears to be a non-starter. Until the Pac-12 starts thinking purely pragmatically, it looks like BYU is just nothing to even pursue relative to that league. But I think a football only Big 12 edition would make a lot of sense for a lot of reasons. And if they were the only Western ad, that still would not be that big a deal. Again, in football, that's really easy to overcome. You can create two six-team divisions dividing it however you want in that league, and it's not going to be that big a deal to get to Utah.
Greg, why do you think that football-only idea hasn't taken hold more in the Big 12? Because I've heard you mention that. Other people have mentioned it. If it rolls around in my mind, and I think, yeah, that makes sense. But it doesn't seem like the Big 12 people really look at that as an option right now.
Well, I just don't know, you know, why they wouldn't at least think about it. And I know it doesn't get a lot of public play, but you could even I mean, associate memberships are not, you know, totally uncommon. You know, there are a lot of conferences that bring in teams for specific sports. You know, Notre Dame is in a way an associate member of the ACC, although in a different fashion. So associate memberships have been done before, and they'll be done again. And if we were to think even a little more progressively, and say the Big 12 were to expand to four football teams, but only two full all-sport memberships, that would also be an option where it's 12 full members and 14 football members. That's another thing to consider. There are 11-team conferences out there as well. They could bring in a full member and an associate member and bring in two football teams and one all-sport edition. That's also an option. I just don't see why you'd close the door to it or at least not consider it. It would certainly make things a whole lot easier. Because BYU, I don't think, is going to demand all-sport membership. This is really a football situation. Realignment is purely football-driven. I don't think BYU is begging to have its Olympic sports in a different situation, but they are, rather plainly, looking to get into a P5 football situation, and that's what this would address, and that's what this would cover. BYU would not need the same fiscal percentage that other schools would get as all-sport members, but football would be a big enough chunk to make the revenue bump significant, and more than anything else, give BYU the access and membership they seek relative to the P5 and the NY6 tie-ins.
Now, I know many reasons why this is the case, but I know you very much enjoy the basketball team being in the West Coast Conference. And one of those reasons is because of the venues and the locations that you get to go to. Let's just say, for the sake of argument, that the football team went football only into the Big 12. Which of those trips would you be looking forward to the most?
Waco?
And I'm gonna assume it's probably either Stillwater or Manhattan. Would that be accurate?
I think anything in Texas, first of all, gets you most excited, and Norman comes right after that, and then everything else kind of filters in after that's done. You know, the Big 12 is a wonderful football conference, and to have that be on your slate, you know, for three or four home games a year would be a great thing for the fan base, and the trips would also be, you know, pretty desirable as well. And in the WCC, in the Olympic sports and basketball primarily, BYU's clearly found itself at home in that league. They've won the Commissioner's Cup 3 years in a row. They're in a conference with a national name and a national powerhouse in Gonzaga. They're a 2 or 3 bid league in the NCAA tournament every year. There's enough going for that league that BYU doesn't feel a need to find a better situation. If they were to be WCC long-term, that's certainly not a bad place to be. And as I noted last year multiple times, the trend of the WCC in men's basketball is upward, and the trend in the Mountain West Conference for basketball has been dipping the other direction. And it's clear that while San Diego State has kind of established kind of a bell cow representation in the Mountain West Conference, you know, BYU and Utah leaving was a big hit for that league. And it's not been the same league since those schools left. And again, by the numbers, Pomeroy and Sagarin and otherwise, the WCC is climbing and the Mountain West Conference is dipping. So for those who pine for the Thomas and Mack and pine for the Pitt and pine for Viejas, I hear you, but I'm not one of those people that wishes for the old days. I'm quite content with where BYU is from a basketball standpoint, and think the league has a lot of room to grow. And again, as long as they're a multi-bid league with perennial top 10 or top 25 contenders and a team in BYU that also finds itself in that mix, you know, there are worse places to be, certainly.
Well, Greg, and I'm not willing to give up that January or February trip to San Diego yet in the WCC for basketball. That was just gorgeous to be able to stand in the sun there.
The West Coast Conference venues in the wintertime are fantastic, and that's why I don't necessarily, you know, relish the multiple connections and long drives in the ice storms through the Midwest in the wintertime that the Big 12 might present if they were ever faced with such a prospect.
He is the voice of the Cougars, Greg Wrubell. Greg, it is always great to talk with you. Thanks for joining us today. We appreciate it.
Good to be with you guys, and I'm sure we'll talk again at some point in the very near future as things begin to heat up and all those sports we talked about earlier. So thanks again, guys.